Content or Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Navaris Chronicles by Josh Hayes, narrated by Roman Howell. 1. The airframe of his Cessna 172 shuddered, the yoke fighting his grip. John McNeil gritted his teeth, cursing the surprising crosswind as he struggled to keep the airplane on course. His heart pounded in his chest, eyes darting across the instruments, double and triple checking. He was sure he was doing everything right, his instructor's lessons replaying on an endless loop in his mind, checklists, procedures, everything. But still, any mistake at 1,000 feet would result in a bad day. Colonel James Jabara Airport loomed off to his right, looking incredibly small and incredibly far away. The airport, visible just past a long tree line, beckoned, along with the most stressful part of his flight, landing. He'd done it before, and even though his instructors had praised his efforts, his first attempt had almost forced him to quit altogether. He'd rather take a blind hit in the backfield, helmet knocked off, body bruised, questioning his decision to even play football in the first place, than land. If he could remove that bit and just keep the effortless soaring above the plains, seeing the world in a way most couldn't or wouldn't, he'd be okay with that.
"All right, John, you've got this," he told himself, trying to keep his hand steady.
He throttled up slightly, checked his position against the terrain outside. Right on course, right on time. Everything was fine. Another 15 minutes, and he'd be on the ground, shaking hands, all smiles at finally becoming a real pilot. Then maybe he'd finally decide what he actually wanted to do with his life. Something flashed ahead, and for a moment John thought it was just in his head. He paused, staring across the clear blue sky, frowning. The forecast hadn't called for inclement weather. The winds were stronger than projected, but in Kansas that wasn't anything abnormal. It had to be his imagination. John scanned the sky around him, checking his instruments. The only other plane in the area was a large KC-135 Boeing Stratotanker, making a slow turn south to McConnell Air Force back miles away. The gauges looked fine. Airspeed, altitude, attitude, heading, all in the green. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary.
"Just your nerves."
A chest-rattling boom ripped through the cockpit, vibrating the stick in his hand. Reflexively, John tightened his grip, wide eyes darting around. He reached for the radio, and a flash of light lashed out through the air like lightning, then another and another. Thunder rolled again, and before John had any time to react, the sky ripped apart. He had no time to think, no time to talk, no time to do anything but stare, transfixed with horror, as red and orange and violet light spiraled, creating an impossibly large spinning circle directly in his flight path. Inside the spinning bands of energy, a fog cleared, revealing a black sky, a lone blue moon hovering just above the horizon. A sprawling city glowed below, tall skyscrapers crisscrossing highways, streetlights, colorful billboards. The stark contrast of day and night, both curious and terrifying simultaneously. He barely had time to process this insane sight, however, as warning alarms blared and the gauges in front of him began going crazy. John's mind screamed at him to do something, anything but fly into the spinning lightning storm of death. Lessons of nice and easy went right out the window. He jerked the stick to the left. The plane wasn't a fighter. It didn't respond quickly in the best of circumstances, and now, hurtling toward whatever this was in front of him, the aircraft didn't seem to respond at all. He jammed his thumb onto the PTT.
"Rick! Rick, are you there?"
The radio buzzed, but no response came through. John pressed the left pedal down as far as it would go, gritting his teeth with the effort, but even as he struggled to avoid the spinning mass of doom ahead of him, he knew he wasn't going to make it. The portal seemed to be growing wider as he closed on it, and even as he banked hard left, he knew there was no avoiding it. Static electricity filled the cockpit. His hair stood on end. The sound of the engine winding down was drowned out by the roar of thunder and wind outside. John screamed as he slipped through the opening. The nose dipped low, bringing more of the strange world into view below. The abrupt change in elevation made his ears pop and his stomach lurched up into his throat. Desperately, he thumbed the ignition switch, flipping it on and off. Losing power had been one of many emergency scenarios he'd gone over during his training, but there'd been nothing about losing an engine while flying through a massive lightning portal in the middle of the sky. Shit, shit, shit! He white-knocked the stick, eyes scanning the ground below. Night flying at the best of times was disorienting enough, but looking down at the strange, unrecognizable landscape, it was impossible to think. He eyed what looked like a partially illuminated highway. It was relatively straight, and he decided it was better than nothing. It wasn't something ideal. Nothing about this was ideal. It was terrifying. If he could just... Something crashed into him, the impact all but knocking the wind out of John's lungs. The sound of grinding metal filled the cockpit as the plane rocked to one side. Stars danced in his vision. Outside, the world spun around him. Half a dozen floodlights illuminated a wide gunmetal gray platform, and even as his mind battled to comprehend what was happening, he realized he'd landed, crashed, onto some kind of tarmac. The right wing slammed into the tarmac, sending up a spray of sparks as aluminum groaned. The plane spun around, bringing the terrifying, swirling portal back into view. The clear blue skies he'd been enjoying moments before looking back at him through the opening. A shadow passed overhead, accompanied by a deep rumbling that reverberated through the small Cessna 172's airframe. And an aircraft appeared, smoke trailing from its strange boat-like fuselage. It didn't look like anything John had ever seen before, but it was definitely on fire and definitely in trouble. John yanked uselessly on the stick, his heels pushing hard on the brakes, trying desperately to regain control. He saw the edge of the tarmac coming up fast, and only then did he realize he wasn't on the ground. He was on some kind of landing pad thousands of feet in the air. In an instant, John knew he wouldn't be able to stop the plane before it went over, and he had no illusions about flying to safety when it did. Against all reason, John's fingers let go of the stick and fumbled with the harness. The straps fell free, and he reached for the door handle, his mind screaming at him to hurry. The door flew open, almost pulling John out with it. He lunged the rest of the way, landing on his shoulder and rolling to his back on the platform's hard surface. John looked up just in time to see the plane's nose dip. It seemed to hang there for a second, teetering on the edge. Then, impossibly slowly, it went over and disappeared. He fought the urge to vomit as he pushed himself to his knees, his vision locked firmly where his plane had just been.
Son of a bitch, he said through heaving breaths.
Metal groaning brought his attention back to the strange aircraft still billowing smoke. An explosion blew out the back end, and it rolled over, then dropped out of sight below the swirling portal. Multicolored lightning flashed around the circumference, and then, almost as suddenly as it had appeared, the portal vanished with a roar of thunder. Heart pounding in his chest, John took a moment to take in his surroundings. He was definitely on some kind of aerial platform, and as he looked around, John saw it wasn't the only one. Half a dozen similar landing pads were arrayed at varying heights, jutting out from multiple structures. Marker lights blinked at the edges, a few lit up by floodlights. A network of catwalks crisscrossed between the buildings, illuminated by sporadic hanging lights. Slowly, John stood, trying to comprehend what he was seeing. The entire complex looked like it had been pieced together from several different structures. Some resembled offshore oil rigs, while others were streamlined, like high-tech-looking space stations. A walkway connected his pad to the rest of the station. Down a short flight of stairs, another platform held a row of cylindrical tanks, all but engulfed in flames. Thick smoke poured from them, filling the air, partially concealing the bulk of the station beyond.
What the hell is this place?
He moved to the edge of the platform, peered over, and his breath caught in his throat. Lights from the city he'd seen flickered hundreds, maybe thousands of feet below. Hundreds of lights zipped through the darkness, crisscrossing the city like a swarm of insects. Of his plane, there was no sight, but John had no doubt it was now a smoldering wreck somewhere among the buildings.
"You probably don't want to get too close," a voice said behind him.
John spun and saw two young men standing on the far side of the platform, partially concealed beyond the edge of a floodlight. The taller of the two wore a dark jacket, green shirt, and black pants tucked into his boots. He had a backpack slung over one shoulder and a pistol in his hand. He looked about 40, brown hair flecked with gray. The other wore a blue t-shirt and jeans. Both were worn and had definitely seen better days. Instinctively, John put his hands in the air.
"Don't shoot me!"
The man glanced down, as if he'd forgotten the weapon, then tucked it away in the back of his waistband.
"Oh, that's not for you."
The shorter of the two gave his companion a sidelong look and shook his head.
"We don't have time for this."
"I can't believe you survived that,"
the first man said, ignoring his companion and stepping toward John.
"You can put your hands down."
With his hands still in the air, John said,
"I don't... what happened?" "Got caught in the transference, I guess. Don't think that's ever happened before."
"Trans... what?"
The second put a hand on his friend's arm.
"We need to go." "Never met an other sider before,"
the first man said.
"Well, not like this, anyway."
What?
John shook himself, peered over the edge of the platform again, then turned back.
"I'm sorry, I don't understand."
The first man laughed.
"Not surprised. Most don't. Then again, most don't come over the way you did. That was impressive."
He stuck out his hand.
"I'm Michael."
John hesitated, frowning.
"John."
He shook the offered hand, 100 questions running through his mind.
"That's Tom."
"They're coming,"
Tom hissed, looking furtively over his shoulder. Before Michael could answer, an alarm echoed through the complex. The long wail echoed through the buildings as if the entire structure was waking up from a long hibernation.
"Yeah, you guys feel free to chat,"
Tom said, turning for the walkway.
"Come on,"
Michael said, motioning John to follow.
"We need to hurry."
John didn't move.
Come on!
Reluctantly, John followed the two men off the platform and into the heart of the complex. Ahead, Tom took the stairs 2 and 3 at a time, running along the catwalk, seemingly oblivious to the fact that there was nothing underneath them for thousands of feet. John's stomach twisted as he hopped off the last step, now moving underneath one of the larger buildings. Dozens of identical catwalks crisscrossed each other under the complex, all connected to ladders and stairways going up and down to various levels. John had to shout over the wailing sirens.
"What the hell's going on?"
"Not really a good time to explain,"
Michael called over his shoulder. Tom sprinting down a branching catwalk, then up a set of switchback stairs to a platform 20 feet above. He shouldered into a door and cursed when it didn't open.
"They must have reset the system already,"
he said, stepping back. He rammed his shoulder into the door a second time, and when it still didn't budge, adjusted his footing and started kicking it. John paused on the stairs, just below the landing, both hands on the rails, trying to catch his breath.
"Here, move,"
Michael said, slipping the pack off his back and rummaging inside. He produced a black, fist-sized canister, pushed past his friend, and pressed it against the door. Tom moved to the edge of the landing.
"You really think that's going to work?"
"She hasn't failed us yet."
"Are you kidding me? She fails all the time."
Michael paused, a disappointed look on his face.
"Oh, come on, that's not fair."
"Fair doesn't have anything to do with it."
"You might want to cover your ears,"
Michael told John, moving away from the door. John frowned.
"What?"
A high-pitched whistle drowned out the incessant siren. A brilliant flash of green and yellow threw after-images across John's vision as the colorful electricity arched over the door. A small touchpad next to it shorted out in a spray of sparks. The device deactivated with an anticlimactic buzz of static, and the door opened.
"Ha!"
Michael gave Tom a knowing glance as he rushed inside. Shaking his head, Tom followed. Michael's voice echoed through the open door.
"Come on!"
John peered over the rail. His mind reeled with questions, struggling to believe anything he was seeing. He had to be dreaming. Michael stuck his head out.
Hey, man, you coming?
Hands raised. He said, I really don't know.
Trust me, you're with the right people.
John laughed. I don't even know you. This is insane. It doesn't make any sense. It's not possible.
Oh, it's possible.
He stepped back out onto the landing, eyes scanning the complex.
I get what you're going through. Well, not really, but I do. If we make it out of this, I promise I'll explain everything.
That didn't make him feel much better. If? Michael motioned him inside.
Come on!
Inside, Tom had opened a large, hard plastic container, scanned the contents, then laughed.
Son of a bitch was right.
He lifted two chrome cylinders from the container and held it up. They looked heavy, both at least 20 inches long and 5 wide, with biohazard warning stickers and writing too small for John to read.
How many you want?
Michael took his pack off, took one, and carefully slipped it inside.
We only need one.
He produced two more of the fist-sized blast devices he used on the door and handed one to Tom.
Destroy the rest.
You know they have more,
Tom said, moving to set his charge opposite Michael's.
Every little bit helps.
After placing his charge, Michael pulled the pack on again and turned to John.
All right, let's get out of here.
John looked from Michael to the open container, then back.
You're thieves?
Tom barked a laugh. Michael shook his head.
Yes, but it's not what you think.
Really? Because it sure looks like you're taking stuff that's not yours. And by the looks of it, it doesn't look like anything you should be just carrying around.
It's not ours, but the people that it belongs to, well, they shouldn't have it either.
A series of loud pops riddled the exterior wall behind John, causing them all to duck. John spun.
What the hell? Is someone shooting at us?
Time to go,
Tom said. He fiddled with something on his chest. And for the first time, John noticed he was wearing some kind of harness strapped around his torso. Bundles of cables snaked down the straps, connecting a string of mechanical components positioned almost haphazardly along the leather. The straps came together in the middle of his chest, secured to a palm-sized metal device. A bright emerald green glowed through a tiny window at its center. He gave the device a tap, and the light inside intensified. A sparkling green mist flowed through tiny vents, coalescing into tendrils of pulsing light that stretched around him, enveloping his body. Both men seemed unfazed by this.
Here. Michael held his pack out to Tom. I hope Bella's wrong about the weight limit.
Tom shrugged it on and adjusted the straps, pulling them tight.
We should leave him.
They'll kill him,
Michael said.
Or worse.
Another barrage of pops ripped across the room's exterior. He ducked away, crouching down in the corner, trying to make himself as small as possible. Michael unzipped his jacket, revealing an identical harness, and tapped the control unit. John stared in shocked fascination as the bright emerald bands spread across his body. Despite the gunfire and men shouting, Michael didn't seem the least bit fazed. Tom, on the other hand, bounced on the balls of his feet, blowing out several short breaths, obviously amping himself up. For what, John couldn't even begin to guess, but he was sure it wasn't anything good.
Well, Tom said after blowing out a final long breath, good luck.
Don't do anything stupid,
Tom laughed.
Says the guy about to do tandem. I'll draw them off you if I can.
Straight to the rendezvous, Michael said. Don't get creative. If we don't make it, go straight to the compound.
He motioned to the pack on Tom's back.
We need to get that to Doc, no matter what. We're not going to have another chance at this.
See you down there.
John was on his feet now, more than a little confused. He started to demand some kind of answer when Tom sprinted from the room, through the door, and jumped head first over the railing.
What the hell?
John shouted, starting for the door, then thought better of it and stepped back just as more blasts ripped through the frame. He spun on Michael, eyes wide.
He's
a little dramatic.
He jumped.
He'll be fine. How much do you weigh?
John scoffed.
What?
Michael eyed him, canting his head to the side.
I'd say what? About 170?
175, John said, confusion growing.
Michael worked his jaw back and forth for a second, as if calculating something, then shook his head.
It'll be fine.
What?
Listen, I know you don't know me, but you're going to have to trust me, okay? You don't want to be here when those shitheads get here. You want to know what we're doing? We're trying to save the world. I know it's crazy and confusing and scary, but please, you have to trust me.
There was something in the man's voice, sincerity, but also desperation. Whoever this man was, whatever he was doing, he most definitely was not trying to kill him like the others outside. John still had no idea how he'd gotten here, or what was happening, or why. But looking into this strange man's eyes, he had little doubt about what would happen if he stayed. John flinched as another barrage of gunfire echoed outside.
Doesn't seem like I have much of a choice, does it?
Michael stepped close, the tendrils of green mist swirling around his chest.
We have to jump.
You're kidding.
Shaking his head, Michael said,
Not in the slightest.
I'm not going to jump. That's suicide.
It's not. But seriously, we have to go.
Michael drew his pistol and moved to the edge of the door. He peered out, then brought his weapon up and fired off three bursts. The shots rang painfully in John's ears, partially drowning out the man's next words.
Go!
John hesitated for a moment, blew out a long breath, then bolted through the open door. He jumped, kicked off the railing with one foot, then was plummeting through the darkness.
2. John screamed, his arms and legs flailing as he fought to gain some amount of control.
Becoming a pilot had been a dream of his for years, but skydiving? There'd been no way in hell he was about to jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
His stomach twisted in knots as he struggled to turn over and face the ground rushing up to meet him. Before he could stop it, he vomited, only just managing to turn sideways to avoid taking the brunt of it in his face. Something bumped into him from above, sending him spinning. He rolled onto his back, arms struggling to grab onto anything, but found nothing but air. That's when Michael appeared, arms outstretched, his entire body enveloped in an emerald glow. He was shouting something John couldn't hear over the roar of the wind.
What?
John yelled, then motioned to his ear.
I can't hear you!
Michael maneuvered, flew, closer, and shouted,
Hold still!
He reached out, grabbed John's shirt, and pulled him close.
I've got you!
Are you crazy?
John shouted as Michael wrapped his arms around him. A strange tingling sensation washed over him as the glowing tendrils of light extended around him.
What the hell is this?
I told you, you're going to have to trust me.
Trust you? You just threw me off a building!
I need you to climb on my back,
Michael said, oblivious to John's terror. The fact that they were plummeting to their deaths didn't seem to faze him.
It's going to be fine, but it's hard enough to do this as it is, and I need to be able to maneuver.
This is so stupid,
John thought to himself. Grabbing hold wherever he could, John awkwardly pulled himself around Michael's body to lay flat on his back. He linked his wrists together around the man's chest and looped one leg around his waist. The tingling sensation intensified, becoming uncomfortable, but not quite painful. His hair stood on end and his stomach twisted. Then he felt something he hadn't expected. He started to feel lighter, weightless. They were still plummeting toward the city, but as their altitude dropped, John felt their speed decrease as well.
How?
Later, hold on,
Michael said. Using his arms like wings, Michael adjusted their trajectory, pulling up slightly so they weren't pointing straight down. The city below reminded John of many coastal metropolitan areas back on Earth. Hundreds of skyscrapers lined the bay, easily hundreds of stories tall. It was difficult to make out any real detail from this distance, but almost all of them appeared to have landing pads sticking out from various levels. A kaleidoscope of color enveloped them. Huge billboards hung everywhere, clustered almost on top of each other near ground level,
and becoming more spread out the higher they went. Michael adjusted course again, leaning his body slightly to the right. The wind still howled in John's ear, but now, instead of fear squeezing his chest, a strange curiosity was coming over him. Instead of rocketing toward the ground at breakneck speed, they flew. John laughed at the idea, not believing any of this was happening. He was dreaming. Maybe he was already dead, though this wasn't at all how he'd imagined the afterlife.
"Shit," Michael said.
"Shit? What do you mean, shit?"
"Tom, get over here."
John glanced around frantically, saw nothing. "How are you?" Then, out of the darkness, the other man appeared, flying almost gracefully, arms extended to either side, enveloped by the same glowing emerald light. He slid in close, but still had to yell over the wind.
"I told you!"
"Yeah," Michael said. "I'm down to 20%.
Tom glanced down at the city below, then back to Michael.
"You see where we are, don't you?"
"No choice."
Michael pointed to a cluster of tall buildings ahead of them.
"The closer we can get to the Conray building, the better off we'll be. At least that will put us near the outskirts."
Tom seemed to consider that for a second, then said, "Don't know that it's any better. Might as well sit down right in the middle of the enclave."
"If we don't land soon."
Tom shook his head.
"I hear you."
He reached into his jacket pocket and brought out a small, fist-sized tablet. After punching in a series of commands, he slipped it back into his pocket and sealed the closure. "Beacons up. It'll take them a minute to redirect. I'll see if I can find a good spot." Without waiting for a response, Tom angled away from them, put his arms down at his side, and shot toward the city below. A stream of glowing embers trailed along behind him.
"John, you're going to want to hold on,"
Michael warned.
"More than I already am?"
Michael angled them down after his friend, arms pinned to his side. Wind buffeted against them, and once again they were plummeting through the night sky, their speed rapidly increasing. Every muscle in his body ached with the effort of holding tight to the other man, terrified he'd be ripped away. Squinting, he could barely make out Tom's glowing form ahead, now only a thin streak of emerald light. He sailed through a gap between two identical towers, his glow reflecting off broken windows. Michael adjusted their path again, leveling out as they flew past, and John saw the interiors of both buildings were empty, abandoned. This part of the city didn't seem as vibrant as the buildings he'd seen from higher up. They seemed run down, vacant, forgotten. Above, he thought he'd seen traffic, lights from hundreds of windows, life. But here, everything seemed dead. A ghost town. Cracked pavement, buildings in shambles, some with whole sections missing. A few streetlights glowed a dull yellow, some flickered. Several vehicles looked abandoned, stripped down to their frames. A monorail track crossed the road on massive graffiti-covered concrete pylons.
"All right, buddy," Michael called over his shoulder. "This is going to be a little rough. You're going to have to jump off when we get low enough."
"Fantastic," John said, trying to judge where he would land.
"Absolutely fantastic."
"It's going to be okay."
"You know, you keep saying that."
Michael adjusted their approach again, slowing even further, now only a few feet off the ground.
"Go!"
"Here goes nothing," John muttered, then let go. He slid off Michael's back, and a second later landed on the pavement below. Pain shot through his legs as his feet slammed down. He immediately fell forward into a roll, though not like any professional parachutist conducting a textbook landing. This was an uncontrolled, painful crash landing. He slid to a stop and looked up to see Michael touching down a few feet away, the glow fading as Michael landed easily on his feet.
"I need to get me one of those," John said, brushing himself off.
Michael grinned.
"You okay?"
John glanced at the buildings around them and said,
"Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not dead."
"Sorry about the landing."
Michael shrugged and opened his jacket, inspecting the harness. The emerald mist was flowing back into the center unit, still glowing, though noticeably duller than before.
"Rig's really only built for one."
You flew, John said,
hardly believing the words even as he said them. How did you...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?